Five scouts' lanterns burned smokily in the ground room of the keep when Dixon ushered his charges through its cavernous door. The lights flickered in the gusts that swept after them and whistled through the slits of window, so that the place was full of monstrous shadows, and its accustomed odour of mould and disuse was changed to a salty freshness. Upstairs, on the first floor, Thomas Yowney had deposited the ladies' baggage, and was busy making beds out of derelict iron bedsteads and the wraps brought from their room. On the ground floor, on a heap of litter covered by an old scout's blanket, lay Heritage, with Dougal in attendance. The chieftain had washed the blood from the poet's brow, and the touch of cold water was bringing back his senses. Saskia, with a cry, flew to him, and waved off Dixon, who had fetched one of the bottles of liqueur brandy. She slipped a hand inside his shirt and felt the beating of his heart. Then her slim fingers ran over his forehead.
"A bad blow," she muttered, "but I do not think he is ill. There is no fracture. When I nursed in the Alexander Hospital, I learnt much about head wounds. Do not give him cognac if you value his life."
Heritage was talking now, and with strange tongues. Phrases like "lined digesters" and "free sulphurous acid" came from his lips. He employed someone to tell him if the first cook was finished, and he upbraided someone else for cooling off too fast. The girl raised her head.
"But I fear he has become mad," she said.
"Wisht, mem," said Dixon, who recognised the jargon. "He's a paper-maker."
Saskia sat down on the litter and lifted his head so that it rested on her breast. Dougal, at her bidding, brought a certain case from her baggage, and with swift, capable hands she made a bandage and rubbed the wound with ointment before tying it up. Then her fingers seemed to play about his temples and along his cheeks and neck. She was the professional of a nurse now, absorbed, sexless. Heritage ceased to babble, his eyes shut, and he was asleep. She remained where she was, so that the poet, when a few minutes later he woke, found himself lying with his head in her lap. She spoke first in an imperative tone. "You are well now. Your head does not ache. You are strong again."
"No, yes," he murmured. Then more clearly, "Where am I? Oh, I remember. I caught a lick on the head. What's become of the brutes?"
Dixon, who had extracted food from the Mearns Street box and was pressing it on the others, replied through a mouthful of biscuit,
"We're in the old tower. The three are locked up in the house. Are you feeling better, Mr. Heritage?"
The poet suddenly realised Saskia's position, and the blood came to his pale face. He got to his feet with an effort, and held out a hand to the girl. "I'm all right now, I think. Only a little dicky on my legs. A thousand thanks, Princess. I've given you a lot of trouble." She smiled at him tenderly.
"You say that when you have risked your life for me." "There's no time to waste," the relentless Dougal broke in. "Coming over here, I heard a shot. What was it?"
"It was me," said Dixon. "I was shooting at the factor."
"Did he hit him?"
"I think so, but I'm sorry to say not badly. When I last saw him, he was running too quick for a sore hurt man. When I fired, I thought it was the other man, the one they were expecting."
Dixon marvelled at himself, yet his speech was not bravado, but the honest expression of his mind. He was keyed up to a mood in which he feared nothing very much, certainly not the laws of his country. If he fell in with the unknown, he was entirely resolved, if his maker permitted him, to do murder as being the simplest and justest solution. And if in the pursuit of this laudable intention he happened to wing lesser game, it was no fault of his.
"Well, it's a pity ye didn't get him," said Dougal, "him being what we ken him to be. I'm for holding a council of war and considering the whole position. So far we haven't done that badly. We've shifted our base without serious casualties. We've got a far better position to hold, for there's too many ways into yon hoose, and here there's just one. Besides, we've fickled the enemy. They'll take some time to find out where we've gone. But mind you, we can't count on their staying long shut up.
Dobson's no safe in the boiler house, for there's a skylight far up, and he'll see it when the light comes, and maybe before.
So we'd better get our plans ready. A word with ye, Mr. McCann."
And he led Dixon aside.
"Do you ken what these blackguards were up to?" he whispered fiercely in Dixon's ear. "They were going to poison the lassie." "How do I ken?" says you. "Because Thomas Jowney heard Dobson say to Lean at the scullery door, 'Have ye got the dope?' he says, and Lean says, 'Aye.' Thomas minded the word, for he'd heard about it at the pictures."
Dixon exclaimed in horror.